Welcome to this week's episode of Entrepreneurial Impact with myself and Dave Donaldson. We're really excited for today's episode, mainly because it's a new year. We've got housing again is what we're talking about. We've got all kinds of fun things around housing stats, mortgage, the impact of buyer, you know, behaviors, as well as where the Trump administration with the incoming new administration, how they're going to look at policies. And we have the pleasure of having Lisa on, as got a huge background inside of economics within with Bright MLS. And I'm really excited for her to really add some more deep dive data to say, like, hey, there's data, and then how does it become applicable to me? And I think that's what I'm really excited about, because as a data nerd and more logical driven, it's great to be like, great, awesome, we talked about a bunch of data, but how does that apply to me? And we're really excited to have someone with Lisa's background to be able to say, this is how it translates to you, and this is how you can utilize that data going into 2025. So Lisa, I just want to say thank you for your time and effort and coming on the show again with us. And we're really excited for the value you can add to the people who have tuned in today on Entrepreneurial Impact.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. To kind of prep everybody that's listening, there's some key metrics that I'm kind of always looking at. And if you watch any of the things that are going on with Fed, like with Fed Powell coming out, a lot of his, you know, where the Fed interest rates at is obviously going to be somewhat aligned with where the 30-year fixed is, but it doesn't necessarily always dictate it. So what I've looked at for 2024, let's just be, you know, we have data hasn't come out for December yet, but for annualized units transacted across the U.S., the annualized number is about 3.92 million. And from what my data looks like, we haven't had a year of that type of transaction of housing going back and forth since like 1996 is, I think, the right number. And if I'm, you know, feel free, I got no ego, Lisa, if I mess this up, you can correct me. And if you look at where, NAR is projecting to, not Forbes, but now I'm drawing a blank on some of the other. They're basically saying there's going to be a repeat of probably around 4.2 million to 4.6 million homes transacted inside of 2025. And then they were expecting, you know, they had the last meeting, they dropped by 25, or if it was at 50 basis points that they dropped the last meeting. I apologize, 25. Yeah, 25 in December. And, you know, everyone was expecting that, hey, we're going to get some more rate cuts in 2025. But when they came out with that, Powell saw 2.5% on inflation, and they are really hellbent on that 2% inflation rate. And I think that they're going to get a little hawkish or even flatline on the interest rates for 2025, because they really want to control that inflation rate. And I think the other thing, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one, Lisa, as you go into 2025, is that I've been really watching between the lines and reading the Fed Reserve's like write-ups, because we can actually get those minutes if you want to. If you really want to be a nerd, you go read all the minutes. And in that, it becomes abundantly clear between the lines that there is two things that they're the Fed is making decisions on, which is unemployment rates and inflation rates. And I think those are the things that right now, if unemployment goes up, that might take a turn for him actually getting easing some of the Fed interest rates. But if that stays at where it's at, you're most likely only going to see somewhere around 75, maybe 100 bips, in my opinion, being decreased throughout 2025. So that's just kind of bringing everybody up to speed based on what I see as a regular person. Lisa, would you like to add anything from 2024 to 2025 at a macro level?
Yeah, you know, Joe, I'm really glad you mentioned the Fed meeting minutes, not because I'm encouraging folks to read them, although they do make good bedtime reading. But I do think it's going to be more important to pay attention to what the Fed's looking at as opposed to what they do. And what I mean by that is we've already seen that mortgage rates are reacting to expectations, right, as opposed to actions. We saw in December, for example, the Fed cut rates by 25 basis points, that short-term federal funds rate. But meanwhile, mortgage rates spent the next couple of weeks on the rise, right? We're at the highest rates of mortgage rates have been since July. But that's because of those notes from the Federal Reserve Chairman, who said, look, we are a little bit more worried about inflation than we were before. We are thinking we're only going to do 2 rate cuts in 2025 and as opposed to 4. And so what the mortgage market said was, well, gosh, that looks like we're in for a little bit of a different picture. And so rates are going to be higher for longer. And I will say maybe not higher for longer, but just this is the new environment. And so I would offer to folks that while it'll always be important to, you know, pay attention to the Fed's interest rate decisions, I think it's more important to pay attention to what's going on in the broader economy, because frankly, that's what's driving their decision making. And the relationship between the actual interest rate cut and mortgage rates that the consumer gets is really, really loose, you know? And so it's more important to pay attention to what's going on in the broader economy.
I forgot this one other thing that kind of stuck out at me. Yeah. And I'm glad you're on this call. This might be for more my benefit than anybody else from a nerd standpoint, is that, how do you see this playing out? That is the first time that new home construction closings are outpacing new construction starts, which is a huge indicator of the housing market, because builders are basically saying, I'm going to close out my stuff in the pipeline and I can't make a certain profit. So I'm stopping my new starts for construction, because we all know builders are not UNICEF. And in so doing, that hinders supply purchasing for materials. It hurts subcontractors, independent contractors that go all around the house for that. So I've not been able to talk to somebody that's actually been able to say, like, how does that one play out in our economy? Because all those subsidiary businesses that employ people and also have costs like the GDP from purchasing can also get impacted when builders stop starting as many projects as they've had in the past couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Like a couple things. So one thing, just picking up on what you said about where we're going to end in terms of transactions for 2024, you referenced that 3.92 million. That's existing home sales, as you know. Yeah. And the last couple of years, new homes, right, have accounted for an outsized share of transactions. So we're not as bad off as it seems when you just look at the trend in existing home sales, right? You said a 30-year low, but if you add in the new home sales, it's actually not quite as bad.
That's good to know. That's refreshing. That's
Yeah. I think, and then the other thing that I'm really glad you brought up is that, you know, the housing sector accounts between 15 and 20% of the overall economy. Housing relates to 15 to 20% of overall GDP in a variety of different ways, with new residential construction being the biggest part of that. I think what we're seeing now is, you know, after a few years of home builders really responding to the intense demand during the pandemic, being able to sort of capitalize, turn some of their profits into the ability to incentivize buyers in terms of rate buy downs and other things, those opportunities are getting a little bit scarcer for builders, and they're holding back a little bit. I think the thing that they're going to run up against is there's going to also be policies and initiatives out there from the federal government that are going to make it even more challenging for home building. So while we've seen a retraction a little bit in new starts, I think it's possible we could see starts decline even further in 2025 if some of these initiatives that affect labor and materials do come into play and make it harder for home builders to build. But as you point out, I mean, that's no good, right? For the
no, the compounded effect of that is that they're still 10 years behind of new build construction. Right. So they haven't been able to catch up from the lost years of the original economic downturn in 2007. Right. Where they pulled the plug for a myriad of years. And now there was some catch up and maybe hitting to some of the levels to get that replacement inventory that year over year needed to be. But now if we have to take the foot off the gas a little bit, that's not really all that great news.
The point is well taken, is that it's not just about what home builders are doing now. It's the fact that depending on who you ask, there's between a 3 and 7 million deficit long term in terms of the number of housing units that we need out there. And so this particular time period that we're in is certainly not going to help in addressing those shortfalls that have been really accruing, like you point out, Dave, for decades.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. When we look at, you know, if we focus on new construction, that some of the biggest challenges that I continue to see is not just new construction and lack thereof, but the market segments of where new construction exists.
So with that side of new construction, because we do have, I want to make sure we've had a really good, our flow for today's call for everybody was really education on the market going into 2025, because when you have education for someone like Lisa, you don't have fear, and fear is what usually causes people to stall, especially with a lot of our broker and realtor listeners that we wanted to give this kind of economics. We give a high, you know, high looking macro level and some builders, inventory, transaction units. But we wanted to go into the most pressing thing that we've been hearing from the constituents that I have on a daily basis is mortgage rates. So Lisa, can you just go into mortgage rates for us and give us like the brass tacks on this one, so people stop getting freaked out and start causing things that aren't actually true about mortgage rates and actually tell them the true facts here of what's going to go on?
Yeah, I think we've been paying so much attention to mortgage rates, and I think people are getting, as you point out, a little bit crazy, maybe a little bit worried, a little bit hyperbolic, perhaps about mortgage rates. We saw rates come down in July in anticipation of the Fed rate cuts in September, and then promptly rise again, driven by strong economic data. We saw similarly rates that had been starting to fall a little bit. Then we saw a reversal here at the beginning of January. The fact of the matter is we're in a new normal for mortgage rates. Everybody knows rates aren't going back down to 3% where they were during the pandemic, but they're not going back down to 5%. You know, we are going to be in an interest rate, a mortgage rate environment where 6.5% is going to be a good rate. But let me tell you this. I think we used to think, oh, well, we need rates to fall below 5, you know, or below 6 to bring buyers and sellers in the market. And I don't think that's the case. The fact of the matter is buyers and sellers have both re-anchored their expectations. They're remembering 7% and 8% rates. And so now 6.5 seems pretty good. And so I think any sort of downward trajectory in rates, even stabilizing in the mid 6s, that's going to be enough to bring people into the market. Now, don't get me wrong, affordability is still a challenge. If the numbers don't work, the numbers don't work. But people who are wringing their hands that the market's going to be constrained because we're not going to see rates below 6, I think that's kind of misguided, because we are now in a new era where people are starting to kind of come to terms with the new normal. So I expect mortgage rates will come down. I think they're going to be bumpy. I think people are going to be opportunistic. And I think we should expect that something in the mid 6s is going to be kind of the new normal for a variety of reasons, not just the Fed, but also we have this rising federal debt. We're paying a greater and greater share towards that federal debt. In order to do that, the government issues bonds, and that has an impact on the yields, which then, of course, relates to what mortgage rates end up at. So this is kind of where we're at.
Is that why they're talking about removing the debt ceiling? Because we can't cover our current interest debt on the funding that we put out there? Would that be a logical conversation to have?
Well, if we raise the debt ceiling, I think it only just digs us into a larger hole, right? So the federal government doesn't pay off interest on the debt with tax revenue, right? They issue government bonds. And so if we have more debt, if the debt ceiling is increased, all that means is the federal government needs to go find more investors for their government debt. Treasury, you know, mortgage-backed securities are competing for those same investors. And so interest rates on those instruments have to be higher as well. So that would be no good, right? If we ended up with more debt for a lot of
people. Well, it also goes back into like the fact of the matter is that there's this competing thing with the Fed as well as the United States government, because the Fed controls that. And if the Fed continues to keep higher interest rates, the debt service then starts blowing out of the water in the budget for the federal government. So I don't want to go down in that macro level, that goes into a whole other thing of like why we actually want to have a balanced budget, and we also want to control interest rates so that our economy is actually robust. Would you give me your perspective on buyer behaviors expectations? Yeah. So that, like, what I heard you say was, like, I look at it in my seat is 2024, end of 2023, all of 2024 was this like spike of almost 200 basis points on the 300 basis points on 30-year fixed. You're like, oh, this is like change. We don't like change. I can't do this, blah, blah, blah. Do you believe that over the past 15 months that the buyer expectations has now set in as like, okay, I've come to grips with it. I know that I'm going to be in the 6.5 to 7.25. Okay, this is what it is. I'm cool with this now. And that you're actually going to have more buyer confidence going to market with those interest rates, so that now as a real estate professional, you're not having to try to like instill education because they've actually adopted that new like reality of what the financial market is for their 30-year fixed.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the only point I'd quibble on is I don't think anybody's cool with it, but they are definitely like, definitely come to terms with it, if for lack of a better reason. I'm being a little bit flip, but I think, I think, no, I do think that there's been, we've seen it even in our own data. We saw in the Bright MLS footprint, which covers New Jersey down to Central Virginia. So not the country, but a good snapshot, a good mix of markets. We saw a really strong December. And what that tells me is, look, there are a lot of people that have been waiting on the sidelines for those 15 months. And they're like, you know what, this is what it's going to be. And so I'm going to get in the market because I've been waiting a long time. I think we're going to see more of that. So I don't think brokers and agents are going to have to necessarily be doing as much education about rate expectations. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's, you know, people need to be cautioned that it's really hard to time rates. I wouldn't try and, you know, peg your whole home buying search on whether I can time the rate for when it dips this week or dips that week. But I do, I agree. I think people have come to terms with and have accepted where we are in terms of a new normal for rates.
Do they have any, and just in your, you know, circles that you travel in, where I know there was like rumors of going to a 40-year fixed rate. I haven't gone down any of it. I was actually, now I'm just getting this idea. Have they thought about like going to a 40-year fixed rate just for affordability purposes? Is that still kicking around?
I would be really surprised if we saw that. I would be really surprised if we saw that. I think that, you know, anything's possible. And I think we'll have to kind of see what sorts of creative. I think the problem is sometimes when we get too creative is when we get ourselves in trouble, right? We all remember that. We don't want to get too creative. I think back to Dave's point and Joe, what you were mentioning is the primary constraint on affordability is a lack of supply. So you can monkey on the demand side all you want, right? But if you don't increase supply, it kind of doesn't matter. So I always think about that when we think about demand side policies like down payment assistance. It sounds like a good idea. But the only thing you do is bring more buyers into a market where supply is already constrained, and then they jack up home prices even more.
So I love that idea, because now I'm going to be thinking about like, what are the supply changes? Mm-hmm. Do you see, so we covered the, which actually rolls into policy change, and I'd love to let you go with your, what you see with the new administration with Trump coming in is, do you see them, I know from my builder connections, the biggest issue that builders have is not so much like labor or materials. It's getting through the permit process, the zoning, and the local municipalities that throw up all kinds of like not in my backyard type of things. And how do you see that playing out to make an impact on the supply side?
Yeah. So the federal government has almost zero ability to affect local land use policy. I mean, that's the truth. However, I don't think that the states and the federal government maybe have explored as many incentives as they could to encourage local elected officials to expand zoning. So you're exactly right. The major constraint on new building is not a lack of labor, is not the price of materials, though both of those will be challenged in 2025. The biggest constraint on home building activity is the permitting process and the process by which local governments tend to restrict and target housing in a way that limits the amount of supply in the places that it's most needed. So, you know, until changes are made like more widespread at the local level, that's going to continue to be. So the way that the federal government can affect that, I think, is, I mean, there are ways to in which you can think about expanding supply by expanding the amount of land that can be built on and whether there's enough federal land that the Trump administration could open up to new housing construction. If that could even make a dent in anything is an open question, but expanding the ability to build on, you know, where people want to live is kind of the major constraint there.
Makes sense. So generally, when you look at the new administration, what are like the top 3 to 5 policy initiatives that they have that are going to affect the housing market, in your opinion?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the things that people have been talking about, but I think are really important to raise, I think sort of this revisiting tariffs is going to be, I think, depending on how they're targeted, how narrowly they're targeted, who is brought into the sort of tariffs, could have a pretty big impact on the material side for new construction. We've already kind of seen that. But I also think tariffs could have a broader impact on housing demand if they end up raising prices, which we know tariffs do, to the end consumer, and we see inflation rise. That will mean mortgage rates are up. That will mean people have a harder time saving. So I think tariffs and how they're implemented could have a really big impact on the market in a negative way, could be a pretty big headwind on the market. I think the other policy initiative has to do with immigration. It's hard to tell how much of all this is, you know, just talk and how much of this will end up in actual policy. But the construction sector relies very heavily on immigration for labor. And if that were to be reduced, that would have an impact, again, tightening up new construction. And then, you know, the other thing I sort of think about is the ways in which policies put out there by the Trump administration may have disparate impacts. I think that what we're going to see is in 2025, people, including would-be homeowners, who are well off financially are going to do better financially. And people who are not and maybe weren't as fortunate to get into the housing market over the last few years and have been trying to get in, it's only going to be harder. So I think we're going to see a divergence in the type of home buyer who is in the market simply because there's going to be some people who are better off financially. I'll just say in our market, again, not the whole country, but the luxury market, Manjo, is on fire. I mean, the luxury market is doing a lot better than the move-in market or even the move-up market. And that's because those are the home buyers who are doing better now and probably will be in the year ahead.
So I know that I want to disprove something and maybe, and I'd love to see if I'm on track or if I'm just some like naysayer that I can go off my corner. most state and municipalities retain their land usage and their oversight on it, and the Fed doesn't really get much into it. So there's two things I see playing out. Is one is that there's real for first-time home buyers, like you've got, it went from like, I think historically 40% of transactions were first-time home buyers. I think I saw some stat that it was like under 25% mm-hmm. of units last year were first-time home buyers, mm-hmm. which probably extends why I think the median age of the home buyers now is like 52 or 50, mm-hmm. somewhere in the 50s range.
Yeah,
now.
And the median first time is 38, highest on record.
It's 38 now. 38. So what I see is that, then the federal government is not really going to come out with a policy for new construction, first-time home buyer, or even workforce housing. It's really going to have to be at the local towns and counties and state level to mm-hmm. incentivize any type of supply side mm-hmm. Disruption in a good way, meaning like bringing sure. actual supply to it, right? So with that, if we know it's going to be the state level, the thing that's coming up that was, you know, passed under Trump's first administration was the, you know, the tax and job, it's like TNJA, the Tax and Job Act, I think is what it is. And maybe I'm butchering that, where it extended the standard deduction that kind of disincentivizes home purchasing for what was like, you know, what you had for mortgage or not insurance, but the interest rate on mortgages. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be strategic at the local level, especially with a lot of like realtors mm-hmm. saying like, what does RPAC do for me? Like we've got the largest sure. trade association, like they're supposed to be lobbying at the local state level as well as yep. the county level and then have NAR along Congress. Like, what do you think they should be aware of at the local trade yep. associations to be lobbying for to actually impact the supply side yep. that's actually hindering us?
Yep. This is my favorite thing to talk about. So every locality in America knows the solutions to increasing the supply of housing. So it's not that we need some new mysterious policy initiative that hasn't been discovered yet. What we need to do, though, is we're not communicating in the right way to have the conversations that need to be had at the local level. So my recommendation is that we need to talk about how localities lose out on economic development if they don't supply a sufficient amount of housing for their population and their employees to grow. That has been successful in a lot of markets. I live here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, and we have suburban communities who have incorporated housing supply policies into their economic development plans. Basically, they've said, in order for us to attract employers, we are going to make the quality, the affordability, and the accessibility of our housing stock one of our draws, in addition to tax policy and incentives and all the other things that go along with it. I strongly believe that talking about housing as an economic development issue, as opposed to a social issue or a feel-good issue or I care about this issue, brings a lot more people to the table. And if local realtor associations can partner with the local economic development folks, you get a kind of a win-win, right? When it comes, because let's be honest, if you are an elected official at the local level, you represent current residents, not residents who want to live there, right? You have no, you don't answer to anybody who wants to live in your community. But if you're a local elected official and you're being told that there are things that will bring economic development and vitality to your community, it's really hard to be against that. And so I feel like that's where I think time and resources could be spent, is on figuring out how to make the case to local officials to get them to have the right kind of mindset when it comes to housing, and that it is an economic development issue as opposed to a social issue. And I think that's where I would focus.
It makes a ton of sense. What and I know we kind of went down into like the local, because I had the hyper. What other things inside of Trump administration should we expect, like, that would macroly impact the next year?
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how much influence the Trump administration will have on the states with regards to policy that affect housing. A lot of times, they've been talking about like deferring to the states on issues, whether they're social issues or fiscal issues. But I do think the states can have a role if they're given given sort of the go ahead to incentivize the localities to make changes that need to be made to increase zoning and increase the housing supply. So, I mean, I don't mean to make it sound like the federal government can't do anything, but it is really hard on the supply side for the federal government to have a big impact when the major impediment happens at a Tuesday night zoning meeting, you know, in County X or Municipality Y.
That makes a ton of sense. When you're looking at affordability and like migrations, right?
Totally.
So one of the things is like, hey, I'm at this realtor board in Fairfax County that covers Loudoun and whatever. And, you know, the things that I've seen is like, where did people move to? And it's always Texas, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia. Like, there have been primarily southern states. I've been this migration to southern states. I think history repeats itself just with different people. What did those states offer, whether like in the macro level economy or local state incentives for housing, that got that type of migration that other states could probably try to mimic and say, they did this, they got migration there. Outside of it, you know, not snowing, because we're sitting with 12 inches of snow outside in the DMV, but like outside of weather, what would you say some of the other states could look at for where people are actually increasing population growth?
Yeah, we've actually seen that a lot here. You mentioned here in the Washington area, we've seen big out-migration of, frankly, people in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s, right? People in their prime first-time home buying age going to those places you mentioned, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee. One thing that those places have had, and I say had in the past tense, that is really hard to duplicate in other places, is they were just less built up, right? They had more green space for development. It is a lot easier to build a brand new subdivision on a greenfield site than it is to pull together the permitting and the zoning and the requirements to get a bunch of infill homes in a market like the DC area that's already built up a lot on inside. So anyway, so there's just more room to build was one reason why supply increased more in those states and housing was more affordable. The other thing, though, I do think is they really welcomed and emphasized the desire to have people move into those communities, where I think in some more built up cities and counties, there's a really like rolling up the sidewalk kind of mentality. It's like, I got mine and now we don't want anybody new. We're worried what that would do to our community. So I think, you know, again, just making it possible for people to find, you know, places to live and allowing there to be more housing built. You know, there's been places that have offered, you know, incentives. I'm from Vermont originally. Vermont would pay you $10,000 to come move to Vermont because they weren't getting anyone to move to Vermont. Oklahoma City is paying, you know, $20,000 if you move there. I don't think that's what people want. I think what people want is the ability to get into home ownership and be able to kind of build a life. And frankly, they want to be places. The one thing I'll say, and you can tell me if we want to talk about this or not, is it used to be you could move wherever you wanted. During the pandemic, your boss was saying, you're working from home, you can live in Idaho, you can live in North Carolina. I think 2025 is going to be a really interesting year where we see a shift as more employers call people back to the office And it's going to be harder to live in Tennessee if your job is in you know, Fairfax County, Virginia. So I think we'll have to see how that plays out.
I agree with you on that one. I do think you're going to see some, the federal government is already trying to do that with Bowser and the Fed employment. So I'm not surprised. Yeah, I do see that, which will, what a lot of people don't understand on that is that your DC itself is missing a lot of commercial real estate tax revenue. And I think that's a, you know, there's a fun one going on in our local municipality around the casino going into Tyson's Corner. Oh. And I think there's some interesting dynamics around, like, you've got vacant commercial buildings that are no longer getting the tax revenue from the commercial real estate taxes, plus also the fact of all the spending that goes on with consumption out there. So that'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. So being with Bright MLS and all the different connections you have, what are the things that Bright MLS is looking at as key, call them key performance indicators or key areas through 2025 that Bright is kind of looking at as indicators of either a slowing market, you know, I don't want to call it recession because I don't think that we're going to get there, but like, or what's going to unlock housing? What are the things that Bright's looking at?
Yeah. So, and I'll speak like on the kind of market research side. I think industry wide, there's also some interesting industry kind of specific things that Bright's looking at in terms of where listings are located and how people are accessing listings. But on the market side, you know, I think, everyone wants to know where the new listings are coming from because supply is really kind of the whole ball game. You know, we talked about affordability, we talked about mortgage rates. So we talked about the demand side a lot, but I really do think that watching what's happening with listing activity is going to be really critical for us to understand whether 2025 is going to be another repeat of 2024 or whether it's going to be kind of a movement in the trajectory back to more traditional level of home sales transactions. And I'm specifically watching the rate lock versus life happens kind of tug of war. And right now I'm thinking life happens is gonna win that battle. And what I mean by that is we do a lot of survey research and we're seeing people listing their homes are doing so because they get married, because they're having another kid, because they need to move near older parents. All of those life happens things that have traditionally prompted people to move are getting people out there, and combined with what you were talking about, people being cool with 6.5% mortgage rates now, I think those life happens events are going to increase listing activity, bringing both more buyers and more sellers, frankly, into the market. We did a nationwide survey of homeowners back in November, and I was kind of curious who would be the most likely people to sell. I thought it was going to be baby boomers. I thought boomers have all this equity in their home. They may even own their home outright, but it turns out that the biggest share of people planning to sell are those in their 30s and 40s, and about a third of them bought during the pandemic. And so again, these are people that you're in your 30s, you live in a 2-bedroom home and you just had your third kid. It kind of doesn't matter what mortgage rates are. You've got to get out, right? You've got to make a move. And so I think those life happens events are what I would be watching to see if it's going to lead to more of this listing activity, more velocity in the market, both more buyers and more sellers, to get us kind of more in a, you know, on a pathway to a more typical level of transactions.
And I guess the final question I've got is, because I've not really looked at the corresponding data, is how is the purchasing of, I mean, I probably know the answer to this one, but I'll ask it.
Sure.
The salaries keeping pace with the pricing of homes, mortgage payments, and the salary, you know, you brought up like, hey, people are doing well, are going to really crush it. But like, how are we thinking in the home? Like, how are you guys looking at it on the economic side of like the salaries corresponding to just living costs? And I saw something recently that I think it's like 41% of people's salaries are tied to their mortgage cost of housing.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to end on a downer, but if you look back over the last 5 years, the typical monthly mortgage payment has more than doubled. So over the past I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that the typical salary has not doubled over the last 5 years. In fact, it's grown by about 16%, you know, pretty much keeping up with inflation. So to that end, it is, that's why we're in this that's why you see all those measures of housing affordability at their lowest levels in decades, because the monthly payments have increased much faster than incomes. So on top of that, we've also seen a demographic shift in who's buying, with more single income buyers buying homes now, right? Couple those two things together, that's sort of a, you know, an affordability challenge that I think is going to take a long time to unravel. And with mortgage rates only coming down a little bit and prices really, I can't find any signs that home prices are going to drop at all. I mean, inventory is just so low and demand is still so strong. So it's still going to be a tight market. And frankly, the people who are in the best position are those who are already home buyers, homeowners, lots of equity in their home, rolling into the purchase of their next home. And then in our market, we've also seen those first-time buyers whose parents are able to help them out. That's where the first-time home buyers who are more advantaged are going to get into the market. So, yeah, we have not seen incomes, salaries keep up with the cost of buying a home by any stretch of the imagination over the last few years.
Well, we'll take it up on an up note, because you're right. Thank you for being the heavy on that one. But I will say thank you, Lisa. And the things that I kind of reaffirmed to me was like, look, you know, if you're a real estate agent, realtor, whatever, the things that you really need to be thinking about to make an impact is the Fed's not going to come in, or the federal government's not going to come in and do anything that's going to change your dynamic. It's that focus on your buyers and sellers that have needs to move because of life events. Understand that you'll probably have some buyers jump off the sidelines as soon as they see a quick rate drop. That'll probably happen at some point when there's more stability from the forecasting in the private or the financial sector. What I'm also hearing is, hey, go lobby for economic development at your local municipalities. And, you know, yeah, it can be a socioeconomic thing, but really be like, hey, if you want to increase and take care of your current residents, the ability to create an economic driver inside that community is the best thing you can do to not only benefit them, but also, you know, get reelected and actually be the fiduciary to your constituents in that local area, because the best way to move that is going to be at the state and local level. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that I kind of took away with it, knowing that interest rates are going to stay flat, units are going to stay about the same as last year, maybe a little bit more, and to know that luckily now buyers have come to their own conclusions that their feelings around interest rates are going to probably come to reality, and you're not going to have to deal with the objection handling of, well, I'll just wait till we get back to finance.
Yeah.
I think those are all the things I kind of took away from your discussion.
Yeah. Love it. I think that's such a great way to sum it up. And, I think it's a lot of opportunities out there, but it is important to be educated and be a resource for those buyers and sellers you're working with.
Real estate agent of choice, because you're an actual advisor and, you know,
great
local expert. So no, I appreciate it. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in this week on Entrepreneurial Impact. Thank you again, Lisa, for your time on going into this deep, kind of nerdy times with data and economics, but I think it's really necessary for people to be educated, like you said. And, for those that tuned in, you know, give us a listen, give us a follow below, and tune in to next week's episode of Entrepreneurial Impact with myself and Dave.